Hi, and welcome to TalkWord. I'm Marty Dundix, editor-in-chief of Weekly Humorous Magazine, and this is TalkWord, where professionally funny people come and tell cringeworthy stories. Oh, I forgot to tell you, a guest right here, we have to tell a cringeworthy story.
Oh, God.
My guest today is Carrie Whitmer. She is a writer, comedy writer. Are you a comedy performer? Do you do any
stage stand-up stuff? Yeah. It's been a while because I've been super busy.
You are very busy. We'll talk about that. When you did stand-up, was it in New York City?
Yeah.
That's probably the toughest place to do stand-up.
Yeah. I've done some shows, not like I've gotten paid on Venmo like $3, but that's the most I've ever gotten paid to do stand-up professionally. But I've mostly done open mics around the city.
Okay. Have you done like storytelling?
Nah.
No? Like The Moth?
No.
No,
I like to think I would be good at it because I think I'm good at stand-up and just storytelling in general, but who knows? I could be awful.
Well, thanks for being on TalkWord.
No problem.
It's so great to finally meet you.
Yeah. Well, we've known each other for probably like over a year now, but this is the first time we've met
virtually.
Person.
Yes.
Yeah, virtually.
On the Twitter.
Yes. Which is how I know, honestly, most of my friends these days.
And then, so you have the Belladonna Comedy,
mm-hmm.
which is... the Belladonnas on Twitter.
Yes. The underscore Belladonnas.
Underscore the Belladonnas.
Because the Belladonna is like also the name of like a porn company or something.
Okay.
So we had some issues figuring out social media handles for that.
Do you get a lot of overlap of people who were looking for the porn company and they stumble upon you?
Shockingly, no.
They're like, you know what? We love your content.
I think that we thought that would be a problem when we first started, but it has not been a problem at all. So well, not a very popular porn production company. I worry about them.
You should. I mean, it's hard to be a really unpopular porn production company, don't you think?
I don't know if it was a production company. It was something that had to do with porn. But.
They are just not good at the sex.
No.
No. So you decided, how did you say, I want to start a female, all-female written satire comedy site?
Okay, so...
Because there's four of you.
There's four of us. So, to make a long story short...
We have tons of time.
Yeah,
These podcasts go on for hours.
Pete Holmes makes them like 4.5 hours, and I listen to every second of it. So, there's these groups on Facebook for writers, and there's one for female comedy writers that I had been in for a while. And it was around the election, and I had been trying to, like, break into comedy writing for a while. I'd had a couple pieces in McSweeney's at that point. I was trying to get into Reductress, still haven't been in Reductress, but was just kind of feeling stuck and felt like, you know, Reductress and The Onion and Clickhole are great, but they're not really... I mean, Clickhole's definitely my voice, but it's hard to be a writer there. And, writing satirical news isn't really my strong suit, and it's not the right platform for a lot of people. So I was trying to find a place where I could really have my voice. And McSweeney's is very literary, and so is the Belladonna, but there wasn't really a place where I felt like I had a home. So I just started posting, like, hey, if anyone wants to start like a Medium site with me, that would be cool. And one day, this was after the election, I had been posting that a couple times, like every couple months, but got really no response. Just people like, oh yeah, that would be so cool, but no one actually taking any action. So I believe Caitlin Kunkel was the first person to
Kunkeltron.
Be like, Kunkeltron on Twitter. She was the first person to really take action and was like, what's your email? And then Fiona Taylor, Fiona Leslie, I think on Twitter. Forgive me if I'm wrong, Fiona. She chimed in too and was like, I'd be interested. And then Caitlin, who knows Brooke Preston, I think her Twitter handle is like Big U or something.
Big U.
Big U. Caitlin knew Brooke from when they did comedy together in Portland, so Brooke got roped in and we were like, let's do this. So we kind of figured out what we wanted the site to be for over a month. We started this like around Thanksgiving, I want to say, like mid to late November 2016. Probably had a call, like a 1 hour to two hour call every week until we launched February of 2017.
And how many writers do you have now total?
Oh, my God.
Because you have a lot of contributors.
I am the worst person of all four of us to ask, like, questions about numbers because I don't remember them. But we have, like, I think over 200.
That's a ton.
And we've had even more than that just submit to the site.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Do you have to read all the submissions?
Yes and no. At first, we had an editorial process where each of us read every single piece, and we wouldn't approve or disapprove of any piece until everyone had eyes on it. But we get so many pitches now,
yeah,
that it was just impossible, and it would take more than a month probably to respond to every piece if we did that. So now we do a 50-50 thing. So if two people say yes, then it's good. But we'll like glance at something like that's in the editorial queue.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that we like actively don't read pieces. It's just we try to get around to everything. And once it's published, I read everything.
Well, that's good.
But submissions is...
Now that it's too late.
Yeah. So submissions is... I mean, I always like everything we have up.
You're like, that down. Galen, pull that down.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
It's amazing that we all just have like a similar mind that's created this thing. But yeah, so we just kind of split submissions now and just kind of read ones as we have time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes a... I think a lot of people don't understand how much reading submissions and emailing back about submissions takes. It's a lot of time.
I read everything. I don't email everybody back.
Okay.
So I'm like... I'm the anti you guys. That's why people love you guys so much, because you're nurturing and you're helpful. And a lot of times I'm not mean. I just can't write everybody back.
Yeah.
So, but if you write something good, you're going to hear back.
That's how I am with work emails. I get like 100, more than 100 like PR emails a day. I don't respond. I respond to like sometimes none of them.
Yeah.
You know,
and you write a ton for work. So can we talk about what you do in your regular life?
Yeah. So in my 9-to-5 life, which is usually more than 9-to-5, I am a entertainment writer for Business Insider.
And I was perusing all of your stuff today at the Business Insider.
Oh, man. Today was wild.
Because of the Roseanne.
Because of the Roseanne thing. It was pretty stressful this morning.
Were you surprised?
Yeah.
That they canceled it that quickly?
Yeah. It was the highest rated show of the year.
Yeah.
And it was making, I think we got like I saw like right before I left, I saw something about how much money it's going to lose in advertising, like $60 million.
It's really sad because I watched, they had this great buildup to that ABC did a special on Roseanne, like, you know, a look back and mm-hmm. then like kind of ramping it up, like, look at, you know, this show is getting back on the air, and it was kind of a behind the scenes of all the cast getting back together again and how they were excited. I don't know if you saw it.
I didn't watch Roseanne.
It was a good special, like, prepping you for this reboot. So it kind of made you excited to watch it because it was kind of nostalgic and it was looking back. And then you watch the actual reboot of it, and it wasn't bad. It captured the same voice from the original series. All the same actors were there. It was fun to see all these people mm-hmm. grown up, and it was kind of cool. But it's a shame that her personal personality, her real person Twitter, had to go and take the opinionated her views and kind of skewer the entire thing. Like, it's not just you. There's a whole bunch of people that made this show happen. Maybe think about them when you're going to go and make a decision that's going to screw everything up, you know?
Yeah, it's also, she also had a history of saying a lot of stuff like this before they even considered doing this revival, which they ABC did say they did because of Trump being elected, because it represents like working class family. But there are other shows that do that.
I mean, they could have just given her a phone that wasn't actually connected to anything and said, hey, tweet as much as you want, you know.
Yeah.
They should have given...
I'm really, really surprised that ABC canceled it. I think she tweeted it around like 2:45 a.m. and they canceled it at 2 p.m. That's when I got the email from ABC.
It's fast.
Yeah.
I mean, you have... Oh, you wrote a bunch about this today.
Yeah.
Many things.
Yep.
So I like all the stuff that's not... the other stuff that you were writing about the Star Wars.
Oh, that's like...
A lot of Star Wars
Those
stuff.
Are like my best days. Like today was kind of a stressful day, to be honest. Like just like waiting for this to happen and like writing about something that's honestly kind of upsetting.
Yeah.
I mean, I do it because I think that was an important thing to write about, mm-hmm. What she said. But just like writing like a ranking of Star Wars characters, That's great. Because I can also, like, put some comedy into it. Like, I say, like, really silly stuff. Like, I think I put, like, a Jar Jar Binks, like, joke in the intro to that post. And I assumed that my editor was going to take it out. And then I heard him. This was on Friday. He just, like, started laughing, like, really hard. And I was like, what? And he was like, the Jar Jar Binks joke. And I was like, oh, you can take it out. I won't be upset. And he's like, no, I'm keeping it.
It shows personality. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, which is super important, I think, when, like, we're a pretty small team, so we're kind of trying to build, like, kind of a voice, and our, just each of us as individual writers, mm-hmm. and that's what I'm trying to do, too.
Yeah.
So it's fun to just, with entertainment, it's less, it's not that it's not serious journalism, but you can also have fun with it.
And you get to see everything before I get to see it. So
I love TV.
You get screeners,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So what stuff that's coming out just now, you've already seen it all?
I've seen Glow season 2.
Oh, cool.
How
far into Westworld are you?
They only gave the press the first 5 episodes. So I watched this past week's episode after it aired.
Okay.
I would be super surprised if they give us any other episodes ahead of time.
I love that show.
Yeah, it's great. It's super confusing. Like, I watch it and I just feel so stupid because I don't understand what's happening ever or why.
Yeah.
But I like it. I can't really explain it.
Well, it's done so well, you know.
Yeah.
It's like so the special effects are so, like, they look real. Yeah, and that mm-hmm. sounds stupid to say, but, like, this world that they've built is believable in the realm of the
yeah,
show.
They're very good at world building,
yeah.
which is why I prefer season 2, because they're expanding it.
It's so much better
yeah.
than season, like, after watching season 2, you watch season 1, you're like, oh, this is so boring. Like,
yeah,
it's just a silly amusement park.
I didn't really even like season 1.
Yeah.
Like, I watched it, and because, you know, you got to be on the pulse of entertainment.
Yeah.
Or at least I do. This was, and season 1 was before I even had this job, but I just felt like I had to watch it to be a part of the culture. But I'm glad I stuck with it.
It's a great conversation.
And the actors are great.
Yeah.
Evan Rachel Wood and Jeffrey Wright, Tandy Newton.
Yeah.
They're really good.
Anthony Hopkins is okay. I guess.
Yeah, he's like a just average actor.
He's fine.
He's not special.
What else did I want? Oh, you have a book coming out. So let's talk about the big book. So the women who started the Belladonnas also got together and wrote an article that became a very kind of happy accident that it didn't get accepted by one group, but did get accepted by
yes.
the other group. So tell that story. That's really
cool.
Oh,
so I don't know if I should, like, say what place rejected it, but it's funny that you say we got together because we really were just on GChat making jokes. I forget what Brooke is much better at telling these stories. She has it, like, down to a T, but, we were just, like, joking in GChat. We're on GChat all day, every day, talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just joking about, like, Tom Hardy delivering LaCroix for a sponsorship for the Belladonna. And then one of us, probably Fiona, said, this is, like, porn for women. And then we just started, like, firing jokes at each other, which we do pretty often. But then I think Caitlin was the first person to say, wait, this is a piece. And originally it had porn in the title. It was going to be porn for feminists or something like mm-hmm. that. And we submitted somewhere, it got rejected. Then we submitted it to McSweeney's. We submitted it to the first publication because we knew we would get paid. But McSweeney's accepted it. Chris Monks accepted it, like, immediately, and he's like, I'm basically not going to edit this at all, which
yeah.
was super nice for him to do. And it kind of went viral.
Yeah,
like,
I
pretty
heard
mega
it was,
viral.
It was, like, the most shared or whatever
yeah,
McSweeney's post.
I think it was their, like, most. Yeah, it got so many shares. I remember, like, we kept, like, sharing how many shares it got, like, per hour.
Yeah.
And we were, like, I think we were stunned. Like, we knew that people would connect with it, but on the level that people did and how many people was honestly something I personally couldn't have imagined for it.
So it's super popular. It's blowing up the internet. And then someone calls and says, we want to make this into a book.
They don't call, they email.
They
so
email. No one calls anymore. What's
no
telephone?
One calls. And, like, I don't pick up when an unknown number calls because
yeah.
it makes me paranoid. I'm like, is someone trying to murder me? So we get an email from an editor in the UK, and she's like, I talked to all my colleagues about turning this into a gift book, that would come out at the end of the year, and they love it. We all connect to it so much. Her pitch was wonderful and made us all feel so special. She emailed each of our personal emails. She didn't email the Belladonna email or just one of us, which a lot of people do. So it made us feel like she did her research, and she was like, I read your site and these pieces are great. And she had like very specific things that made it clear that she was interested in us. So we were like, holy shit, we need an agent. Because she was prepared to send us an offer.
Yeah.
In like 2 days, we gathered a couple agents to talk to on the phone. So we did that throughout like the course of 2 days. We picked an agent, and then we started putting together a proposal. And while we were putting together the proposal, we were hosting a show at Brown University. It was crazy.
That's a busy weekend.
Yeah. Brooke ended up getting snowed out at the show, so she couldn't come in. So she did the bulk of the work on the proposal, and it was amazing. And then our agent sent it to a couple of U.S. publishers, and we had all these meetings. And this was all in the matter of, like, 2 weeks. It was crazy.
So when's the book? The book is due next week?
The book is due June 7th.
That's soon.
Yeah.
And is it almost done?
Yes.
Okay.
We have a lot of it written.
So there's enough for them to pare down if they want to.
Oh, yeah. I think that's what our goal was. And this is another reason why I'm going to Ohio this weekend. Yeah. So we can all get together and figure out, like, what if we should put everything in or take some out. And we've sent batches to our editors, both in the U.S. and the U.K. They're working together. Mm-hmm. And there's been one piece that was cut. And there's been some that we have to modify for UK culture.
Interesting.
Which is super interesting to think about. Like, they don't know what LaCroix like is there.
Yeah.
And, like language and people, like, they're not going to be as familiar with American politicians and some American, like, pop culture icons and stuff like that, which is interesting.
And fascinating.
It honestly makes it a little more fun to think about, because
you get to add the word crumpet in there more often.
Yeah, and like be like, British history, British females.
How can I make
history?
A joke out of this?
Yes.
It's like, look up Wikipedia. I'm like, okay, our joke decoded works better if we use this celebrity and this fizzy beverage.
Yes, and we've also done, we explained what LaCroix was to our editor, and then we have like a co-agent in the UK, and I think he in the email thread was like, oh, so it's like this beverage that also began with an L and kind of sounded like LaCroix. And our editor was like, oh, we can just use that.
Perfect.
We're like, that's perfect.
Done.
Like, the UK has a LaCroix, which makes me super happy for them. They deserve it more than we do.
I don't understand where this LaCroix came from, and I find it very suspicious. So, where all of a sudden, I'm fine drinking Schweppes, and then all of a sudden, this LaCroix is everywhere.
Not a huge fan of Schweppes. So
it's just fizzy water, isn't it?
I prefer... To Schweppes, I prefer Poland Spring, but for me, I'm originally from the Midwest. I'm from the Chicago area. So LaCroix comes from the Midwest. My mom always had LaCroix, and it was
something
that... So it's
been around for a long time?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's been around
all
since...
All of a sudden, it just kind of showed up in the grocery stores around here.
It did. So I don't... I don't want to say how long it's been around, but it has to have been around since, like, the 80s.
Okay. I'll allow it then.
Yeah. So I remember... But... Pretty limited to the Midwest.
Okay.
Kind of like how cheer wine was to North Carolina, but now you can get cheer wine anywhere.
I have not heard of cheer wine.
Oh.
Is this wine?
No. It's a soda.
Gotcha.
It's kind of like Dr. Pepper,
okay,
but more cherry.
Well, like Yingling beer.
It's like,
used to be only in the Pennsylvania area. And then other places started getting it because it got popular for some
reason.
This
is a good comparison that we both understand.
All right.
So, but LaCroix reminds me of like being a kid, and we moved to North Carolina, where the cheer wine state.
Okay.
When I was a kid, but we would go to Chicago, and I would spend a lot of summers there. So LaCroix is a thing that I remember as like a childhood thing, and then it started becoming available everywhere, and I was like, holy shit. And they have all these new flavors.
I feel better about this now.
Yeah.
I was uncomfortable seeing it take over the grocery store all of a sudden, like some sort of an epidemic.
No, it's not like this terrifying brand that has just suddenly taken over a, like, dare I say, centuries-old beverage.
Yeah.
It's like it's been around for a while.
All right, then I'll accept it.
Yeah.
I'll welcome it into my life.
And we at the Belladonna are proud drinkers of LaCroix.
I like the grapefruit LaCroix.
The grapefruit's good. I like the orange. I like all of them except like coconut.
I have not had the
and
coconut.
I don't like peach pear.
I like just the plain.
The plain is good.
Fizzy water.
Yeah.
I get a soda. I have a soda stream at home because I drink so much
nice.
Fizzy water.
Right now, I have literally two cases of LaCroix in my fridge.
It's a lot to carry around when you have
to
buy it.
So my grocery store has a ton of LaCroix. And it's just, it's everywhere. It's wild. They literally redesigned the store a couple months ago to accommodate for the LaCroix stock. I'm not kidding.
They're like, we need this to be our thing. We're that place that has every single kind of LaCroix.
If you need LaCroix, go to Bed-Stuy. So
if you need LaCroix and you're in Bed-Stuy anyway, this is the place to go.
Yes.
How is Bed-Stuy these days?
It's great. And the grocery store is 2 blocks away from my apartment, so it's not a hike. So Bed-Stuy is good.
I used to have friends that had a bar. They had a bar in Bushwick.
I'm on the Bed-Stuy, like, Bushwick border. Bed-Stuy's huge.
Yeah.
So to give people a context of where I live, I say, like, I'm closer to Bushwick. Like, I can just walk to Bushwick.
Because I'm near, I've been to the Bushwick area that's by Wilson Avenue.
Okay.
And there's a bar called something that has photos of dogs wearing hats.
Oh, I don't know. What is that sounds like so me.
There is a place. It's on Wilson Avenue. And it's called, I can't remember. I'll think of it. But the whole thing has dog portraits, and they're all wearing hats.
Oh.
It's ridiculous. It's like a specialty cocktail
place. That
sounds
very Bushwick, though.
It's very Bushwick. It's cute. So what else did I want to ask you about? Well, the book's very exciting. That's coming out. So that's going to be out in the fall?
Yeah, November.
November. And now you're going to be a published author, which is going to be huge.
Yeah, it's amazing.
What other kinds of pieces... had you published in McSweeney's before?
So I wrote, my first one was, oh my gosh, it was called Welcome to Teen Island, and it was just like about an island. Like, it was basically, I did like a satirical brochure for an island where teens have to go until they're done being teenagers. And I think that it really spoke to Chris because he is the father of teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was like, I think one day I was on the subway and just like really terrified of being very terrified of teenagers, like leaving school. I wrote it on the subway.
Yeah. I've been in New York for like 16 years, and I think I'm more terrified of teenagers than I am a suspicious homeless person.
Yes.
Who's like, you know, threatening in some way. Yeah. I would rather have the threatening homeless person than the teenagers.
Yeah.
On like a side of the street, on the subway, like I'll cross the street to get away from teenagers.
I'd rather
I won't cross the street because of a suspicious looking person, but I'll cross the street because of teenagers.
Because
they can be mean.
I would rather be in a subway car with like literal human shit in it than in a car with a bunch of teenagers.
Yeah.
That's how scared I am.
I think the majority of New Yorkers would probably agree with that.
Yeah. So I did that, and I remember I think I posted it on my Medium page, which is where I posted like all my like comedy I was writing.
Yeah.
But then immediately I was like, actually, I should just submit this to McSweeney's. Why not?
Yeah.
All I had ever gotten was rejections, but you know, another one wouldn't hurt me.
How long had you been submitting to McSweeney's?
A while. I think I started when I was in college, not on a regular basis, but probably around like 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Not on maybe like once a year. But I started submitting pretty regularly around 2014 when I started to be like, actually, this is something I really want to do with my life. So I need to actually do it instead of waiting for it to happen.
Well, I mean, you've been working at the Business Insider writing for not too, too long.
I started in January of 2017.
Okay. Not too long. Mm-hmm. So what did you do before you were like a TV writer?
Freelance. Just honestly, freelance just trying to get a job. It was hard.
Where'd you come to New York from?
I went to college in Georgia at Savannah College of Art and Design. While I was there, my parents moved to Southern Alabama. So I lived there, hated it. Not my kind of town.
What was your major in college?
Creative writing.
Oh, okay.
So I had to take drawing classes, yeah. And I initially went there thinking I wanted to do like costume design, and I was like, no. And then I was like a film major for like a couple weeks, and then I took the film class, intro to film, and I was just like, I can't be around a bunch of guys who think they're the next George Lucas all the time.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of realized, like, my whole life, I think writing was the thing that I always knew I was good at, but never really realized was something you can do.
Yeah.
So even while I was studying, I didn't know what kind of writing I wanted to do, but I was applying, after college, I was applying to like advertising jobs and stuff, and the comedy thing was always kind of in the back of my mind, but I never like realized it was something you could really do. I was like, well, that, like, you can just get on SNL, but that's hard.
Right.
Like, that's really the only thing I had known that you could do with comedy. Straight, like, either stand-up or you're on SNL.
Yeah, there's a whole world of writing comedy that is kind of like it's a very specific niche, because there's so many funny comedians or funny performers or improv people or whatever, but they can't write comedy at all. You know, it's totally different to be able to write like a premise, like a McSweeney's piece. It's so different than just writing jokes.
Yeah,
you know, it's such a niche of comedy. It's like a whole different language.
Yeah, that's why there's some comedians who are super good at stand up or they're really good at like writing for TV, but they are not good at Twitter because they can't limit themselves to the characters.
It's really tough to do that. That's why Twitter is so much fun for comedy.
Yeah.
If you can boil down a joke to a very small 180 or 240 or whatever it is now, like that's and have it be really concise and funny, like that's a huge talent to be able to do that.
And
you can tell when you do it right, tweets go crazy. Like
there is a science.
Yeah.
There is a science to a viral tweet.
Yeah.
I've had two, and I still haven't been able to replicate it because I haven't figured it out. But
Have you played on that Pitch app yet?
Yeah, I deleted it, though, because I just wasn't... It wasn't really... I think it was distracting me from doing other stuff.
Yeah.
So I'd rather, you know, I'd rather try to sit down and write, like, a full-fledged piece rather than, like, sit on my phone.
Yeah.
And I have to try to be off my phone as, like, screen time needs to be limited because I stare at screens all day.
That's true. How many pieces do you write for Business Insider?
Oh, God. Like, a day? It depends. It honestly depends. Like, today was... like a big news day, so I think I did two, but was also working on something else. So it honestly just depends. If I have a slow day, I'll try to work on something bigger. Like if I'm doing a big slideshow, like those Star Wars ones, that will probably take me a whole day or a day or a half.
Because the big articles like that, you have to put them all together, right? Doesn't that take forever?
We have like a CMS, so we gotta put pictures, we gotta source, we gotta like create all the slides, we have to do SEO. And stuff like that.
And those articles you write, they get hit. They get so many hits. Like I was looking at them today, and it says like 61,000, 120,000. Like it's so many people are reading these.
They got a big audience.
How does that feel writing something that like 120,000 people see in like a day?
I never really like think about it, honestly.
You're like a voice of the entertainment generation.
You know what I think? I think I want more Twitter followers, and I want more people to read my comedy.
Yeah,
I want that many people to read my comedy.
Is that in your bio? Like,
no, my bio just says that I write about TV.
Can you put your Twitter in your bio on the Business Insider?
Yeah.
You got to leverage. I can. Put it in there.
Yeah.
Get people to hop on that.
Yeah.
Because you had a piece in the New Yorker that you paired up with illustrator Jeremy Wynn. I know him through Instagram.
Yeah.
Is his name Jeremy Wynn's?
Oh, no. His last name is, I don't want to butcher it by trying to pronounce it.
On Instagram, he's Jeremy Wynn.
He's everybody. Jeremy Wynn on Instagram, and he's wonderful.
He's a very good illustrator. Yeah. He's a very good cartoonist.
Very supportive person.
I think I'm emailing him for him doing stuff for Weekly Humorous.
Oh, that's exciting.
We do a lot of cartoons.
Yeah, he's a cartoonist.
Yeah, he's very good. And what was the piece you just had in the New Yorker a couple of weeks ago?
Oh, yeah, it was called... Genetic lottery tickets.
That's right. That was a really good piece.
I was super proud of it. So that was Jeremy's idea, and he came to me. He'll come to me with like some ideas that he thinks I can write better, and he'll just illustrate it. So I wrote most of the text. He went through it and made some changes, and then did the illustrations, and it really transformed. It was just like, it didn't make any sense the way I wrote it. Like, it made sense. Like, you could see the jokes, but It was awesome. Looked
great.
Yeah.
And it read great. It was a really creative piece.
Yeah.
And was that a Daily Shouts?
Yeah.
Okay. And is that in the magazine?
No.
Or is that only online?
Only Shouts and Murmurs is in the mag.
Okay.
Yeah. And they only have one per issue.
That's what I find very annoying about the New Yorker comedy stuff, because I read the New Yorker and I think the comedy stuff is the best part of the magazine. And I like that they're doing more online stuff. But I really want to see more Shouts and Murmurs in print, because there's so much of the magazine that it's like long boring stuff sometimes.
Yeah.
It's very good writing, it is. But it's kind of like you have to eat your broccoli and then you get the good stuff, and the mm-hmm. good stuff is the Shouts and Murmurs, and there's not enough of it.
One thing I find, this is both great about the New Yorker but also very annoying, is that I'll be reading, like, I remember I was reading Ronan Farrow's like long reported
yes.
piece about Harvey Weinstein.
That was long, very good.
Very long.
Very long.
I mean, it honestly took me hours to read it. But like intertwined, like they'll have in these very yeah. serious articles, they have like the cartoons.
Love the cartoons.
And I'm like, I think you maybe need a humor section.
It's like, hey, we know this is really boring. Here's a cartoon to keep your interest yeah. for a little bit longer. Okay,
yeah.
back to the boring stuff.
Which does help me keep my interest, yeah. but then I'm like distracted by trying to understand this very clever cartoon, but then I'm like, wait, I just lost my place in this long article that I've already been reading for 2 hours that's like super serious and making me cry.
Yeah.
But
also I read an article that was super long in the exact same way, where it was taking forever. It was the about the Steele dossier. It was like a whole expose mm-hmm. on that, the man who put it all together, and it was really, really in depth. It was really, really long, and I kept on, they would be cartoons. Like, I was reading the physical copy, and there was, like, cartoons here and there that, like, keep your interest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they actually use the cartoons to keep you going. They're like,
that's cool.
We know this is long. Here's a break.
Yeah.
Okay, back to the stuff.
I subscribe to The New Yorker, but I really only read the Shouts and Murmurs if it's a title that captivates me. I usually read the Shouts and Murmurs.
Yeah.
And then I just skip to the back and read the critics.
Yeah,
if it's like a long story, yeah, like I read Emily Nussbaum, who's like one of my inspirations, but and I like Anthony Lane's like movie mm-hmm. reviews, which I've been reading for a long time. But I really only read the longer reported pieces if it's something that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Or something someone told me about.
Yeah. I love the covers. And
oh my god, I keep just a stack of covers that I'm like, one day I'll frame them, and they've just been sitting in dust for 3 years.
Yeah, there's a lot of, and then in Brooklyn, especially on like weekends when people are finally cleaning out their apartments mm. on the stoop, you'll find like stacks of magazines, New Yorkers or like New York Times
mm-hmm.
or like everybody has a stack of things that they've been meaning to read forever, and then people just, either the wife or the husband or whatever, gets fed up and says, these have to go, and they finally get rid of them.
My boyfriend started a subscription a couple months ago to The Economist, and he was like, I'm gonna read this every week. No. He hasn't touched it.
Yeah.
So I just like throw them away, and he's like, where's my Economist? And I'm like, threw it away. And he's like, you throw away my Economist, but you keep these New Yorkers all around our apartment for
years?
That is
quite the double standard.
Yeah. It's funny. It's a fun argument to talk
You're
about.
Like, the Economist covers are not nearly as good as the New Yorker covers.
No, some of them are clever, but they're never as, like, from an artistic standpoint,
right.
as good as the New Yorker.
I agree. Have you been to the New Yorker Festival?
No.
I've only been one time. It's cool. It's like the New Yorker comes to life.
It's always like, I want to go, but I can't afford it.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Well, one of my favorite writers is Steve Martin, and he used to always do features in the New Yorker. He used to do like
mm-hmm.
Shouts. And they turned a lot of his Shout stuff into a collection that I think was like Pure Drivel was one of his collections. And it was from the New Yorker and from,
oh.
I think, New York Magazine. And he just like took a bunch of his short writings and made it into a book. And that's when he first started kind of writing on that kind of stuff. And they're so funny. They're kind of like a McSweeney's, but like much more twisted.
That sounds like me.
Yeah.
That's
oh, you should
cool.
definitely check them out.
That's
oh,
awesome.
They're wonderful.
I love his memoir, Born Standing Up.
Born Standing Up is so good.
That's a good one to read when I'm like feeling like super uninspired and unmotivated. And then I'm just like, I just need to do it.
Yeah. Like when he writes about his, like the 70s, when he was like a superstar
yeah.
stand-up comic. And he was like, I mean, he was like a rock star of comedy. And people would just like, there was like mobs of fans like screaming his name, kind of like that level of like fandom that he was in. And it's fun seeing him now. Like I saw the live show with him and Martin Short.
Oh,
I saw it live in Baltimore. It's That's now awesome. On Netflix. It's called A Night That You'll Always Forget or something
I
like
haven't
that.
Seen it yet.
It's
I
great.
I love Martin Short, too.
He's so funny. And they're like best friends. They've been best friends for like 30 years. They go on vacations together. They're really funny together. Like they're obviously very close friends. And they just insult each other for like 2 solid hours. It's
that
really
amazing.
Entertaining. And there's so much. There's singing and dancing. And he plays music. And he does banjo. And there's comedy. And it's for two older gentlemen. Man, they really pack in a lot of stuff.
It's so funny because to me, Steve Martin is just like the guy who plays the dad in all these like family comedies I watched when I was a kid.
And since he's always had the white hair, it's like he's never really aged.
Yeah.
It's, you know, when he was young and famous, he still had the white hair.
He looks the same.
Yeah, he looks the same. Like, it didn't really affect him at all.
I just, like, remember, what is, like, one movie he was in where he was, like...
Father of the Bride.
Yeah. Horrible Cheaper by the Dozen movie.
Yeah.
That's what I remember him.
Like, he was great in L.A. Story, which was very different.
I haven't seen that.
It's very different than all of his other things. I feel like he may have had a hand in writing that. But that was much more, he plays a weatherman in Los Angeles. And the whole thing's very satirical about living in L.A. And he has a really younger girlfriend who's Sarah Jessica Parker at the time when she was much more of a young actress. So she like plays the young actress. So this was probably in the 90s.
She's been doing
something.
It for a long time.
Yeah. So you did stand up. Do you have any cringeworthy, awkward stories of doing comedy in New York City?
I haven't really. I think I just like wasn't doing it. I haven't done it like enough to really have like a heckler story.
Well, what was like your first experience doing stand up in New York City? It was at a open mic.
Oh, no, I actually Jeremy on Instagram,
the illustrator.
Yeah, illustrator. He invited me to perform in a show. I had never done stand up before, but I think because I had been writing so much comedy, he thought that I had. So he invited me to do it in a show he was hosting. That was like they had comedians paired with illustrators.
Oh,
so
cool.
I sent the illustrator I was paired with, who's Ellis Rosen, who is now a New Yorker contributor.
He does stuff for Weekly
Humorist. Yeah, Ellis is great. So he also went to SCAD.
Oh, cool.
And I guess we're taking over the humor space.
Yeah, definitely.
So I was paired with Ellis. He sends me a drawing. I sent him a piece that I wrote. And then we each wrote something based on what we gave each other. Like he did a drawing based on what I sent him. And then I wrote a piece based on what he sent me. And he sent me this like really funny drawing of Wolverine eating at Mystic Pizza. From the Julia Roberts movie. Mm-hmm.
And I was born in Mystic, Connecticut.
Oh, I've been through the train stop there on Amtrak, so I know where that is. And my boyfriend's from Connecticut. So I just performed a piece. Like I think it was like a kind of like a character piece as Wolverine at Mystic Pizza.
So was it really like grumbly the way that did you do it? Like,
so what I did was, because I didn't want to do like the Christian Bale thing with Batman, or like
Batman.
Or the Tom Hardy thing with Bane. So I just kind of started it with like a voice like that, and then just read it as like in my own voice, and then at the end like reminded them it's in this like weird Wolverine voice.
I want to remind you that I am Wolverine.
Yeah. And that was like really my first time performing, and I was so nervous. I got really drunk because I was super nervous. It was at Pine Box in Bushwick, which has a really nice space in the back, by the way. So I had like a couple beers before, and I remember just like being super nervous. And right before I went up, my boyfriend like took me aside and was like, "Every guy here is going to want to fuck you." And I was like,
okay,
that's what I needed to not feel nervous anymore, which is super gross, but it's true. And then I was like, I was really good.
Yeah.
And a couple people in the show came up to me and they were like, "You're so funny. Like, how long have you been doing this?" And I was like, "This was the first time."
You're like 25 minutes.
I'm like, I'm like really good, and this is my first time. So I felt guilty for kind of being like that. So then I started going to the open mics, kind of sporadically. I took a stand-up class.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
How did that go?
It was good. The good thing about it was that it got me to write so much material and got me to think more about jokes as stand-up jokes.
Yeah.
Because I at that point I had already been published in McSweeney's. Like I was doing a lot of satire. And when I was taking this class was around the time the Belladonna started. So it was, I honestly kind of felt pretty cocky because I was like the only one who had any experience doing stand-up in my class, any experience doing any humor writing.
Yeah.
But I didn't like want to brag about it.
You're like, I'm already kind of a big deal.
Like, people in my class didn't know who Ali Wong was.
And now she's huge.
But this was a baby Cobra had already been out for a while.
Yeah.
So I was like, who the fuck are these people? And it was like people, like, I remember our intro class was, I hate talking shit about people, but I'm not naming them. So they were like, oh, my coworkers think I'm funny.
Yeah.
And like, oh, like someone told me I remind them of Amy Schumer, like stuff like that. Yeah. I'm like, but I was the only one who wanted to pursue comedy.
And you'd already done it, and you already had some stuff under your belt. Yeah.
Yeah. So it got me to write a ton of material. I was like, my show, my set was my final set. We did like our final class was like a show at Broadway Comedy Club. And my set was really good. I mostly talked about how I wanted to like have sex with murderers.
Okay.
And
why is that?
I did. It was, remember the Jinx? I did a lot of jokes about how Robert Durst was kind of hot. And then I did a whole joke about how I would like murder someone if I could get a free bidet.
Those are comfortable.
They're great.
You know,
and
once you go bidet, you don't go back.
It's really weird that they're like a thing in every bathroom in Europe, but nowhere here. And we probably have the nastiest asses compared to Europeans.
Yeah, probably.
Like we eat more. We eat more junk.
Yeah,
we need bidets more than Europeans need bidets.
By far.
So they need to send us all their bidets.
Yeah, I don't know why they never really picked up the bidets.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
It's weird.
Like, not at all.
No. It's honestly upsetting. So I did it. Like, this was what my set was about. I threw in a couple O.J. Simpson jokes. I think I wrote a joke about how if O.J. Simpson was a woman, he would have gotten paid more for the book he wrote about getting away with it.
Probably.
Yeah. Or he would have gotten paid less, I mean.
Oh, yeah. Well, if I did it, maybe.
It was some kind of gender equality joke.
Would that be, was it 70%?
Yeah.
Yeah.
70 cents on the dollar?
70 cents on the dollar.
Is that it?
I think so.
I don't know. Like I said before, I'm really bad with numbers, so don't count on me to get that right.
I won't. So you have the book coming out. It's called Feminism for...
New
Erotica.
Erotica for Feminists.
You say it.
New Erotica for Feminists. A subtitle is... Sultry Tales of Love, Lust, and Equal Pay or something? I don't know. I don't remember the subtitle.
Out in the fall.
Out in the fall. Out in November, around midterms.
Are there going to be illustrations?
Yes.
Ooh.
It's not going to be an illustration-heavy book.
Right.
I think it's just going to be like at the intro of every chapter.
Have you picked out who's going to do the drawings?
Not yet.
Okay. That's exciting.
We're in the process of talking. So we've like contacted the people who we're interested in.
Yeah.
And it just kind of depends on our budget.
Yeah.
And everything, so...
That's very exciting. Congratulations with all that.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's...
And go to the Belladonna's at... is it thebelladonnas.com?
Thebelladonnacomedy.com.
TheBelladonnaComedy.com.
If I get this wrong, I'm going to be super upset. TheBelladonnaComedy.com.
And on Twitter, you're at the... Wait.
Underscore Belladonnas.
You're at underscore Belladonnas with an S.
Yes. Or you can just search Belladonna Comedy.
Search Belladonna Comedy. It's very popular. They have over 200 writers constantly writing for them. You have a show in Ohio this weekend.
Yeah.
So if you're in Ohio, go to the show.
You can find Columbus, Ohio.
Columbus, Ohio. What's the place?
I believe it's called Rambling House.
Cool. And you just, what's the comedy like for the event?
We're going to have our contributors read pieces.
Okay.
And then we're going to read our piece, I think. We're going to do something, and then we're going to do a game.
Okay.
It will be fun.
It's going to be great.
And it's
then...
early. It's at 6 p.m.,
oh,
which
that's
is
nice.
Like... so good for us because I have an early flight the next day and we can't, like, I'm too old to do a show at 10 p.m.
And then there's a show here on Monday,
which I will be back for
the 4th,
and I will come from work because good. I can just walk.
That's good. I'm glad people are going to come to that
because
we are featured in the issue of the June issue of The Writer magazine, which you can pick up at Barnes and Noble in the arts section of the magazine rack. There were two in Brooklyn. I bought them both, so good luck finding them in Brooklyn. But you can find it probably online. I think it's at thewritermagazine.com.
Yeah, you can download the app.
Download the app. I think the entire article is going to be released to the wild on the internet soon.
Okay.
I think they do that.
Oh, so they like kind of wait until like
I think they do.
They get people to buy it and then
right. They get us. They get the people who were in it to buy it and force everyone to buy
it. And like their parents.
And exactly.
Yeah.
All the relatives have to buy the issues and then they give it away for free on the internet like 2 weeks later. So that's what's going to happen. So this is fun. So what's your we want to beef up your Twitter. So what's your Twitter handle?
Carrie's not scary. So is my Instagram. Everything's Carrie's not scary.
And I follow you and you post hilarious things on I think it was the day of your birthday, which was last week. Mm-hmm. Happy birthday, by the
Thank
way.
Thank you.
You had a funny photo of you in pajamas.
Oh yeah. I think bought it was like these 9 PM. Imperial I'm a Star Wars fan,
yeah.
obviously. So I saw these pajamas on Forever 21, which is like I'm too old to shop at. But they have Stormtroopers and Darth Vader heads on them.
Yeah.
And it was like $17. And I'm like, fuck it. It's my birthday. I'm buying these fucking pajamas. And they came in the mail on my birthday. So I took a really bad mirror selfie with them.
And that was on your birthday?
Yeah.
Where I think you were partying hard on your birthday. And it was like
no, because it was a Monday.
O'clock. Yeah.
It was a Monday, so I was tired. I went to work. A lot of people take their birthdays off, but yeah. I was like,
You have things to do. You have Business Insider stuff to write about.
Yeah, I have important reporting to do. I'm writing a book, so I was like, I honestly like didn't have time to drink.
You're like, I'm an author, okay? I'm not this stuff. I'm a comedy author. Thank you very much.
I'm a soon-to-be-published author.
That's exciting!
Yeah.
Well, this is awesome. It's so nice to finally meet you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on the podcast. This is Talkward. Thanks for listening. Please follow Weekly Humorist online at Weekly Humorist and sign up for our email newsletter every Friday. Go to weeklyhumorist.com. Talkward is distributed by Humorist Media. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.